Hi, everybody. My name's Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 50? I don't know. Maybe it's 49. Doesn't matter.
You're obsessed with numbers.
I love numbers.
You're obsessed with knowing what number we're on.
Yes. I want to say hi to Karen and Nikki and Peggy and Millie and anybody else who's going to be joining us here in a few short moments. So, excuse me. So, Millie put a hat on.
Yes.
She
wants to be like us.
No.
She knows what's good.
So it's a Monday. So this isn't an especially, I think, popular day for people are kind of catching up to the week and the weekend and all that. So.
Well, we usually have Zen Talk on Friday, but we can't do it Friday. What did we have Friday?
We didn't want to do it on Friday.
Oh, yeah, because my girlfriend is coming in on Thursday. She's going to be with us all day Thursday. I don't know what time they're leaving on Friday, and I just didn't want to have to worry about work. So, and then Todd's traveling Tuesday and Wednesday. So today was it. So it's happening. So let's go.
Here we go. So as always, if you have any questions.
So do I, Millie. I just got back from yoga.
Yes.
So I didn't get very dressed up. I often hope that people listen to Zen Talks via audio.
No, I want to see everybody's pretty face.
Well, I know. Millie, just get a marker and just write it on there.
You see the ZPR there?
Yes.
It's called subtle marketing.
I know.
By accident.
I know.
So here's the first question. And then I encourage any of you who are challenged, want support, want to ask a question to Kathy and I? Oh, and there's a chance we might use this as the audio podcast for next week's podcast, just to give our listeners a tease on what Team Zen is all about. So just an FYI.
So if you ask a question, obviously we won't use your full name, but if we by chance do use it as an audio podcast, we just want you to know. We just want you to tell you ahead of time.
We want to give you a heads up.
So you don't ask the question if you don't want you to be hurt.
But we hope that whatever questions you do feel comfortable with, that you jump
in. And that we just use your first name.
So here we go. And if we run out of questions, Kathy has some things she wants to share.
I do.
So the first question is, I got snot on that.
Oh. Okay, read it because I got to go get it.
It's from Erin. She can't make today's talk. But she wants us to continue a discussion on tweens in middle school, child supporting them starting coming into their own. Social media, self-care, peer groups changing, etc. My daughter recently was not on an invite for a birthday party of whom we thought of as a pretty good friend. It was a big surprise, so pretty obvious. I think I did a great job of just listening honestly with that one. But just that topic in general of having to now sit back a little. She's our oldest. She's 11 and she's in sixth grade. Up until now in elementary, you do so much more for them and with them. I know this is through your whole discussions, just looking for a little extra support in this topic of my transitioning into the role of a mom of teens. So she's not a teen yet. She's a preteen. She's 11.
But she's moving into there.
Yeah. And Erin saw her daughter get hurt for the first time by her peers, by not being invited to the birthday party. And that sucks.
Yes. So here's my thought on that. Did you want to go first?
No, you go.
Is that we have obviously experienced that with all of our children. There's nothing I can do to say that it will be easy, or I'm not going to pretend that it's something that you just get used to. But what I do think is important is changing the perspective on what's happening. What I mean is that instead of getting intimately involved and kind of diving into the skin of your child, which I know we don't do intentionally, but when our children get hurt, we often literally try and like feel what they're feeling and, or if not try is the wrong word. We end up feeling what they're feeling. We feel hurt. We feel that they're so hurt that maybe they can't handle it. We feel we need to make it better. We feel we need to solve it. What I have found that has been more helpful to me in those situations is to remember that you aren't them, that they're having an experience, and that you get an even more important job, which is you get to support them and not fix it. It is really important that our children have certain experiences at home when we're around. And what I mean when we're around is that we can just be there as not someone who says, well, you know, like somebody was, just, one of my clients was recently telling me that one thing that she always says to her kids when something like this happens, like an invite isn't given or, you know, their friends blow them off, is she'll say, well, what did you do to make this happen? And I'm like, yikes. Like I didn't say yikes to her. I was just like, well, and she's like, well, I want her to take responsibility. And I said, well, there's a place for that, for self-awareness of what's happening with the people you're around. But that's actually like a blaming that they, you know, instead of and again, that's another version of like getting overly involved. There is either the we're way too sympathetic and empathetic, or we're so overly involved that we blame them. And instead, we just kind of sit back. And when they sit down, we put our arm around them and we say, been there. Anything I can do to help? Want to watch a movie tonight? Oh, you just want to be alone? All right. I gotcha. I understand. I gotcha. Like there's a lot of like, I kind of feel like when they have those experiences at that age and in their teenage years, there really is, you're separating more because it's not your issue. You're not going to solve it. But what you're reminding them is there's someone there that loves them all the time. And when these things are happening, they're happening and they're real. And you're not going to say it's not that big of a deal. Or in college, you'll find your real friends. Don't do any of that. But just remind them that you're there and that you understand and that you're willing to listen. And again, Aaron, it sounds like you are already doing that. And you're just saying, is everyone else going through something like this too? And I think the answer is yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to reinforce what you said, sweetie. We have a tendency to make our kid, the minute that they get disappointed, we make them, we overcompensate by telling them, oh, well, you have other friends, or just like basically leap over allowing them to be sad. And it sounds like Aaron said that I think I did a really good job of listening, honestly. Good. So she's already doing, Aaron, you're already doing it. And it takes practice. And the fact that you are already doing what we think is probably an appropriate response is wonderful. So just keep building that muscle.
And I want to add to that is Todd and I just did an interview the other day for a friend of ours who has a podcast. And one of her questions was, you know, what would you tell your younger self as a parent? You know, like when you were a parent, when you were younger, when your kids were little. And my answer was that it's that time is really difficult. That when you are having, like I had three little kids and obviously Todd was around too. It's got nothing to do with me doing it alone. That's not the path I'm going down. What I'm saying is that I struggled a lot. I struggled with making sure they all had attention. One needed a diaper change. One is trying to walk down the stairs. One, you know, like it was just physically and emotionally difficult. And I found myself always thinking I must be doing something wrong because this is difficult. And what I realized after so many years is it's difficult because it's difficult, not because I'm necessarily doing something wrong. I think that's the same case for teenagers, is that we have so many feelings that we think I must be doing it wrong because I'm having all these uncomfortable feelings. And the truth is you're having feelings because that's exactly what's supposed to be happening. So it's less about tell me how to change the way I feel about this. And it's more about accepting that feeling sad or a little scared or anxious is part of the process of being a parent. And the more we accept that and reach out like we all are right now and say, do you feel this too? And someone says, yes, I do. Then we're like, okay. Like, you know, obviously there's red flag feelings like depression or so much anxiety that we, you know, there's feelings that we really do need to get more significant help. But when it's just, wait, this is hard. I must be doing it wrong. No,
it's just supposed to be, it's supposed to be challenging. So, all right, we're going to zoom over to Karen. I think she's either folding laundry or she's getting Christmas ready or something. What are you doing, Karen?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, loud and clear.
Okay. Rap and teacher.
Ah. Yes. She's multitasking.
My question, I think I kind of, I always am. I can't help it. My question is, can you guys hear me okay?
I can't. It's kind of choppy, but I can hear it fine.
Okay. I'm in the basement. I'm going upstairs.
Okay.
Hold on a second.
Take your time. Well, we could sing Jingle Bells.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
I'm good.
Okay, good. Good, because Todd was going to get
in. So my question, I have I have three girls and a boy. My five-year-old is in kindergarten this year. She's young. She just turned five in July. A lot of kids in her class turn six over the summer, so she's really young. Yeah. And her biggest concern, so despite her age, she is extremely intelligent, like so, so smart. But when I met with her teacher for our conference, she says she cries all the time.
Mm.
But so part of me is like, because she's five, and it's like silly things, like she drops her pencil. You know, like it's not, I'm just trying to find a better balance. Like, I don't want to tell her to stop crying. Right. Like, so we have like a little, did you cry today at school, Maeve? And then she's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, what did you cry about? I couldn't find my red crayon. You know, like you, most of the time it's not even like somebody hurt my feelings.
Right.
Because she is like, she's on it. Like her like social piece, like she, nobody pushes that kid around, you know, like she might be tiny, but she makes up for it with like her big personality. So, I guess I just need somebody to be like, she's not going to cry forever. I mean, I know that, but,
all right.
I mean, we got upset about it at school. Her teacher does try to ignore her a little bit, you know, like not give her a ton of attention for it. But I just want to know if I need to like do anything else, if you have any thoughts. Like, she's definitely like my most emotional like
kid.
Yeah.
All
right.
I'm
going to mute you. Yep. I think we got the gist.
Do you want me to go first? You want to go first? You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, regarding her age, that could be a part of it. Like I really wouldn't know, but all of my kids cried in kindergarten. And one of them's a September birthday, which means she turned six, and one of them was a November birthday. So age for me wasn't the issue. I think it's very normal for a kid who's in a school setting for the first time. And again, even if she did preschool, there's a different kind of pressure in kindergarten, which is so funny. It's a funny sentence.
Yeah.
There's a different kind of pressure in kindergarten. But I think they're not just crying about the crayon dropping or not being found or the pencil dropping. I think there's a lot of feelings that they're having about saying goodbye in the morning, about the expectation, about the faster pace. And then when the crayon drops to the floor, that's the straw that broke the camel's back. So she really, even though that is the final thing, so when you say, why did you cry, that's what she's going to say. I think there's more to it. And I think that my opinion, and my girls all had the same kindergarten teacher, and she was maybe 70% on board with me about this. She was a little old school, and I loved her. She was so good with our kids. Like, she was a great, like, discipline. Like, what was she like? She was, like, really good at getting structure going in the classroom. Totally old school. But what I went in and said with all my kids at different times is, if they're crying, they just need to cry. And let's come up with a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, my middle daughter, her plan was she would go to the bathroom. So not because she should be embarrassed about anything, but just so she could let it all out and not have to stifle, you know, like not have to be like, like I'm crying and be embarrassed. She could be like, okay, I need to go to the bathroom. And so, and luckily the bathroom was in the classroom. And I told the teacher, I said, she may be asking to go to the bathroom more often. She doesn't need to go to the bathroom. She just needs to.
The bathroom was in the kindergarten classroom?
Yes. Remember, her desk was right here and it was right around the corner.
Oh, that's right.
And I said, if she needs to go, let her go. Cause that's the way she's going to work through her emotional stuff. The teacher was kind of like, all right. Like, she didn't love it, but
that's when you stood up.
I did.
Said, hey, listen,
I stood up.
Listen, bucko.
And no, I didn't do that. I just said, let her do that, because what I believe is your daughter is growing muscles right now. And sometimes muscle growing is kind of painful. She's like learning the beginnings of this and the way that kids release, because they're lucky and blessed and they're free, is they release through tears and laughter and anger, right? You know, that's like all the way all humans do. but we expect kids like on a certain day in September or August when they're starting school to be like, okay, no more of that. And that doesn't make any sense really. Right. You know, so, but she is, by looking around at her peers and by other kids who are older, learning that I would, this is still coming out, but maybe one day I'm not going to do it as much. And also her maturity and her brain development is going to play a role. So it's not all going to be decision-making. It's going to be like maturity. But I mean, if I think what you're asking for is a few things, like, is this normal? Is this okay? Yes. Is this something I should worry about? I don't think so. I think that it's something that you follow with her, meaning like with my girls, I didn't worry about it, but I kept tabs on it. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't like, oh shoot, this means ABC.
You don't say, do you cry today? The minute she gets in the car.
No. And what it can, instead of, did you cry today? Here's a different language you can say. Say, how'd your emotions feel today? Or how, if you guys make a plan of her crying in the bathroom or, you know, asking if she can run to the office real quick, you know, you create what works with the school, saying, how did that work today? Did you need to use that? And if she's like, I did need to use it, say, great, good. I'm so glad you were able to use it. Rather than, oh shoot, you cried, that's a problem. It's, oh shoot, you used your tools, or not, oh shoot, oh good, you used your tools, that's great. So then she knows the emotion isn't the problem, because it's not a problem. It's the healthiest thing ever. But she will, the other answer to your question is, will this end? Yes, it will. All of my girls were criers. I said on the show yesterday something that I hadn't fully realized is all three of my girls, at least in school situations and with adults, were initially really shy. Not they are shy people, but their actions were shy. And none of them are now. Mm-hmm. That is not a, and we didn't do anything about it.
Right.
We actually just were like, fine, be shy. But so that's what I would offer.
Hey, Karen, do you feel like this teacher is a good advocate? Like, you think she's a good teammate?
Oh, she's amazing. That's why I feel like she's doing everything she can do. Like, yeah, a lot of times it's like they'll go to the rug to share something, and well, there's 15 kids in her class, so not everybody gets to share. So she cries because she had something really important to tell. You know, like, so her teacher made a plan where, like, okay, Maeve, why don't you, like, come tell me late in a little while, you know, or like, you know, like, so she's trying to work with her too. And she said, like, I don't want to tell her not to cry, because that tells her the wrong thing. It's more like, I guess, I don't necessarily say, would you cry about today? I more say, like, how are you feeling at school today, Maeve?
How are you
know? Yeah. And she's like, I cried three times. Like, she's kind of the one keeping the tabs on the crying, but.
And that's great, because that tells you so much about her own self-awareness. And then when she says, I cried three times, it in a, you know, and again, I'm kind of play acting here, but in a normal tone of voice, just being like, okay, tell me about all those times. Yeah, those do sound like tough things. That can be hard, can it? So you can still talk it through. And again, I understand why the teacher needs to ignore it sometimes.
Absolutely.
So like, no harm, no foul there. But, you know, from our perspective as parent, it's like we listen to it. And then when she gives us her last one, say, yeah, that was tough. You made it through. Mm-hmm. Let's go eat dinner. You know, the kind of like, that's because one thing I'll say about that's a perfect example. If she's on the rug, she wants to share. You think about kids growing up in their home, especially with you being an engaged mom, they get to share whatever they want all the time. And there's a new muscle that has to be developed in a school, in a classroom.
Called discernment.
It is. Discernment and patience. And it's not always about you. And those are difficult lessons. And that can bring up tears.
Well, and I would say, and we're going to move on to Millie next, that, and I think you know this, Karen, is that this is one of your children's strength.
Right.
This is not something that needs to be fixed. This is, now she needs to, you know, be a part of this system that is school, but this is a strength of hers. So nurture it. While at the same time, there is some patience building and discernment that needs to go with it.
It's part like your final answer or your final question was, is she going to cry all the time? No. Is she learning something from it? Yes. You're right there with her. The teacher's right there with her. You're just in the middle of it. So
sound good, Karen?
Thank you.
All right. Keep us updated. See how it's going. Let's move over to good young Millie.
I was going
to
say, you always say good old Millie. And that's, I think Millie's younger than we are.
She probably is.
Yes.
Oh, you know what? No, I'm not.
No, I think you are. I'm 47.
Thank you for thinking it, but I can guarantee no. Because I know how old you are. All right. So I have my twin 6-year-old boys. They're in first grade now. Their personalities are quite different, even though they're super good friends. So Oliver is the one that is he's the quieter one in public. And I'll just say in public, like at school and everything. No one can believe that he has a voice that could break glass at home. No, seriously, I mean, preschool, no one can believe this because he is so loud at home and he has his other personality. So he holds that all in, I think, at school. He doesn't speak up and all this. All right. So I'm guessing it's because he does hold it in at school that when he comes home, he is a tyrant.
Right.
I mean, tyrant. That's the only word we can think of to call him, because with his brother, who uses his words better, he'll just snatch things from him. He'll just steamroll him. Right. So we try to say, okay, hey, Oliver, you know, let's use your words. Oh, you want that? Why don't you say, hey, Aaron, can I play with that for a little while? I mean, we do all that,
right.
But what other strategies could we employ?
Mm. Let's see. So basically the kid's ultra quiet. So it's funny. He does what Karen's kid doesn't do, is he does discern. He's like, oh, this is a situation where
I'm going to not
talk. This is a different setup. And it's funny. There's no right or wrong with either one. I don't know.
Well, I have one thing that I, when I'm envisioning that scenario, because I would do the same thing you're doing, which is, oh, it looks like you want that. You know, I'll help you. But I also think what has helped with my youngest daughter the most in the last like year has been humor. And again, not a fake kind of, not like, hey, let's laugh about this, ha ha ha, but like a, when he is, you know, and again, sometimes if he's like hurting him or pulling on him, it's hard to find the humor in that, but it's saying something like, whoa, like, that's a lot of pent up energy, it sounds like, from school. Or if you don't want to be that direct, to be like, whoa, it seems like, you know, you were here then and now you're here and, you know, what's going on? And the what's going on isn't a, like you're trying to get them in trouble, because you still have a smile on your face. You're not angry, but it, like, I feel like what humor does, the visual I get when you come in, instead of, because the coming in with the, oh, it seems like you want this, that's the compassionate place. And I feel like that can open a door, but if you're doing that, it doesn't open a door. Sometimes coming in with the, whoa, you know, I'm trying to think of like, what would I say? You hear me do this all the time. Like, you know, like two girls are fighting and I would be like, hold on.
Yeah. Like back up.
Like what's going on? Like, I feel like humor opens a door too, where then you have more room and space to say all this stuff that you're saying. You may have already said this to him about, you know, maybe you hold in a lot of your energy at school. So when you come home, it comes out, which really isn't inherently a problem. Like that's not something he needs to fix or you need to fix. Like, he doesn't need to be something different at school, but what he needs to understand is if he's going to bring that energy home, he has to be self-aware enough to know that he doesn't have permission to dump it on everybody else. So it's not about, Oliver, you need to be different at school and you need to be more like your brother so you don't make us miserable. That's not it. It's more about, because you're more reserved, which is not a problem. That's your personality. It's beautiful. We, you know, but because you're more reserved, sometimes when you come home, you got all that energy, you know, and you even can show him, I don't know how interested in science he is, but what energy particles look like when they're moving, and you got all that. And sometimes that comes out in like yanking things or being loud. And that even isn't inherently a problem as long as no one's getting hurt in the process. You know, it's okay to be a bulldozer as long as there's no one in front of you that you're bulldozing over. How about that analogy? I don't know where that came from. That doesn't really make a lot of sense, because if you're a bulldozer, you want to bulldoze over things. But my point is, it's okay to be a car, just don't.
What are you talking about? Emily, I'm trying to unmute you, but it's not working.
Okay.
This may be overly practical, but does he have, after school, does he have some structure,
an energy release,
ability to release his energy, whether it's playing outside or going to some type of class or just some vehicle to express this. And I know he's only six. It's not like I'm trying to get your kid into a class when he'd rather be at home watching TV or eating mini wheats. But is there anything, do you think that that might have any warrant or no?
Some days he does. He's the sports guy versus the other one who's the, you know, the quiet engineer. But not the stereotype engineers. But, you know, it depends on the day. But I think even in the basketball situation, I think he is more reserved.
Yeah.
I think with his friends, he can probably let some of that out, you know, on play dates and everything. But, no, I think I mean, even we let him run loose in the backyard or whatever. I don't know. I mean, it starts to come out, of course, but this is a kid that loses it when anything negative happens.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, he just loses it. And I mean, it's a huge emotion. So I guess though there, you know, we have to, like you recommend, you know, recognize the huge emotions, but your idea of showing him, like, science-wise, even how energy, that would be interesting.
Or what about you know, to name it, detainment? Like, does he have words to say? You know, there's all those like poster size charts of different emotions. Yeah. You know, the only way to become emotionally intelligent is to be emotionally literate, and the way to be emotionally literate is to actually have the words. And he's only six, so this might be new to him. But the difference between frustration and anger and happy and not knowing what you feel.
And disappointment. Because that when you said something negative happens and he loses it, sometimes we go straight, like as parents, we go straight to you're so angry, but really what they felt was disappointment first. Mm-hmm. And that's really where then the anger stems from. And that, you know, that being compassionate about that feeling is a lot easier than, wow, you're just raging about this now. It's you're really disappointed by this. And I agree with Todd. Naming it is helpful for everybody. And I think when kids are really young, which your son is right now, even giving that feeling a name, like it's a type of animal or it's a, you know, it's another, it's the, like a version, because I don't want to, the reason I'm hesitating is it's not like, oh, that's the angry Oliver. Or, you know, like you don't want to do that where it's like a bad piece of him. It's like, that's a piece of me. I like the animal analogy. That's what feels most good to me. Like that's a piece of me that needs to come out so he can see it as something that isn't all him. It's just something, it's a piece of him. Mm-hmm. Because that's, I think, I mean, your son is, if he got that this early, like literally, if you guys talked about, there's all sorts of pieces of you and there's a part that is more quiet for its own reasons. There's a part of you that's more, gets more disturbed by disappointment and this is how it comes out. There's parts of you that is very reserved or athletic or whatever, and they have names or they have ways that you can discuss it through what the emotion is or what an animal is or what a color is. Colors are often used, you know, that's your red or that's your orange or, if kids have an understanding of that, then there's so much less shame involved, because a lot of times what kids believe is if I did that, then I'm all bad. Mm-hmm. And if it's, they realize that when I get angry, this happens, but that's a piece of me. That's not all of me. And I can actually make different choices. You know, I can pull on the other part of me, which is a calmer, discerning part to help me with this part. It's like, that kind of self-awareness is so mature.
Yeah.
But if our kids can even have words for that.
And Nikki's onto something she wrote in the chat box. Basketball hoop, trampoline, fidget toys, balance balls, things at home he can direct his energy into. Like I was thinking of just punching a pillow. Have you done any of that type of stuff? Was just giving him permission to beat the crap out of a pillow or something like that?
Oh, yeah. We've got the trampoline. We've got the balls. We've got
Does he use them?
Yeah, but you know, like he won't go out there by himself to do it, right. I guess. So, I guess.
And Millie, that might take time. Like, yeah. I think that when our kids are really little, we say, gosh, they have this tool or they have my support or they can call this feeling an orange or a red, but why aren't they doing anything about it? Mm-hmm. You know, like I know that I should take my vitamins every morning. And for some reason, sometimes I don't. Like there's a human component too. Like we have everything right in front of us and it's like, then just use it. you know, and we don't. So that's where we're, you know, like there's, I guess what I'm saying is if you feel like you constantly need to direct him, I don't think that's, I think that's okay. That it's not like it's a failure or like he's just not understanding. If he occasionally uses it when his brother goes with him or if you direct him, that's still a win.
Does he ever get physically aggressive or no?
Oh, yeah.
So is he beat, is he beat his brother up
yeah,
and all that?
Yeah, he beats his brother up, yeah.
Oh, you know, does he beat him up? I mean, he's the one who will be the aggressor. Yeah. He's not going to go, like, slap him. But he is absolutely the aggressor.
Yeah.
Whereas polar opposite at school, right? So I know that this is coming out and, you know, he's bestowing that joy on us. And I don't want to take up too much more time, but I, with him specifically, and I feel like this is so specific, I don't want to take up too much time, but right. As you're talking about this, it makes me think that, because you talk about the shaming thing, which absolutely, I don't want to do that. But there's one big, huge issue with him other than this, being aggressive thing is that he's in six and he knows how to, he's potty trained, but he continues to have accidents to the point where the doctor wonders if, you know, there's issues and everything, but he just doesn't care if he's wet.
Yeah.
You're nodding. Cause I'm thinking, I don't even know how to help him. And when I ask him to go, he's like, no, I don't want to go. And then literally like 10 minutes later, he's wet. Right.
Yes.
And so, is it a power thing, control thing?
I think so. I mean, there obviously in all these situations, when it comes to things around, you know, bladder control, because that's such a common thing with kids, that obviously physical needs to be ruled out, you know, before, like, for example, if I was to see a kid in the hospital and they were saying there is, regardless of age, you know, there is, you know, issues with toilet training of some kind, you'd rule out physical first, you know, is there any problem? Is there any blockages or any, you know, whatever. And then it's like, I mean, 99% of the time it's control. And it's not necessarily like, oh, this is the parent's fault. It's not an arrow to like, they're trying to have control over you. It's control with life, you know, it's control with, you know, it's so interesting because eating and releasing are two of the ways that we can be autonomous. Mm-hmm. It's why anorexia and bulimia are often a very big choice for people who, girls and boys, who are struggling with control in their own lives. Because what you take in and what you take out, nobody else can do. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily, like, I'm not saying, so here's what you do about it, because it's not a simple thing. But just understanding that he is trying to exert some control over his life will maybe a little bit decrease the tension from, you know, like this is an area that, it's not about, he doesn't know how, as long as the physical is ruled out. Mm-hmm. He just needs to do this on his own terms and time, but also saying, you know, it, like, I'm trying to think if that was happening in our experience, there were times when the girls were younger, that there were things like that. And it was just, how can I support you in this? Like having an extra pair of pants with you.
Well, and I don't know the psychology of it, but isn't when a kid goes pee, even though he knows how to not pee in his pants, that it's an attention thing? And always. I'm not saying, because it sounds like he's getting a lot of attention.
Right. Not always.
In other ways, but whether he pees in his pants or if he hits his brother, he's still getting attention. So
well,
is it just another vehicle for him to say, hey, look at me?
Think about it. It can be attention, but there's so many other ways to get attention besides that. Like there, I think about it, it's another form of release or not release. Like think about what Millie's saying. When he's at school, he holds it in. Mm-hmm. When he comes home, he lets it out. Bowel movements and going, you know, and urination is the exact same thing. Hold it in, let it out. Like having control over your own, like it's, and again, even with that understanding, there's no simple explanation. I can't say, so that means do A, B, C. It builds a sense of understanding and compassion that he's trying to find autonomy in his own system. Mm. And that instead of, you need to do this for me, which you did, you never said you said that, but, or you need to do this because other kids are going to think this or that. It's how can I support you in feeling more like you have control? And so if he doesn't, if he does go to the bathroom in his pants, instead of why would you do that or don't do that anymore, it's how can I help you? And I happen to have an extra set of pants in the car, because anything else kind of reinforces the old model. And again, we're still going to lose it sometimes about it. It's still like, that's one of those issues that I know a lot of parents probably on Team Zen can relate to, regardless of age. You know, there's kids who, you know, parents I've worked with whose children are going to camp at like eighth grade and still having issues mm-hmm. with bedwetting and that kind of thing. It's not something, it's got nothing to do with, oh, they're this tall, so it's an issue, but it's not. It can be an issue with older kids too.
I guess all the only thing I want to say, and then we'll go back to Millie.
Okay.
I guess it just, you know, to you, exactly what you just said, Kathy, school, he's in control. Uh-huh. He holds it all in, and come 3 o'clock, hey man, this is the other Release. Side of who yeah. I am. And I'm going to let anybody and everybody just deal with whatever I feel like expressing right now. And that could be, I feel like peeing in my pants and you're going to have to deal with it. Or I feel like hitting my brother. I'm going to have mm-hmm. to deal with it. So it does kind of make sense that both of those things are happening.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I mean. That one is a holding, one is a letting go, as is our own body systems. And that even though there's no simple explanation, it kind of gives you more insight to him. And one thing that I thought you were going to say that you didn't, and I appreciate it, is sometimes we'll say, but yeah, it's a choice, mm-hmm. but it's beyond choice. There's so many pieces. It's not just, yes, we'll say, well, he chooses to be discerning at school, but there's some underlying emotional reasons for that. There's personality reasons. There's in how he's affected by the world reasons. It's not just I'm choosing it, I'm not choosing it. It's how he comes into the world. It's how he feels the world. Because I think that some of my teachers probably would have thought when I was younger that I didn't have a lot. I was very quiet, but it was just because school was, I was overly sensitive to a lot of things. But then I'd come home and be a totally different person. So sometimes just the way we relate to our environment.
Well, and then, you know, even with, obviously we want to give space for our kids to express themselves. While at the same time, and I'm sure Millie's doing this, there's certain rules.
Correct.
Can't hit your brother.
Right.
Like, and this is what happens when you do. And I don't know, whatever, you have to decide what that is, but it's not like we just let this kid, you know.
Well, of course not. And like, but the discussion is not so much you hit him, this happened, then this happens. Like that's just consequence and punishment. It's what is set up in you or your belief system that the person that you get to harm is this person. Like your energy is not a problem. Your emotion is not a problem, but harming this person is a problem. And even, you know, especially being twins, your other son is probably, I'm not saying he's used to being hit or having someone be aggressive with him, but they do have their own kind of communication that we don't understand. One of our daughters just said to us, because they were arguing in the hallway and I was getting overly involved. And my daughter was like, Mom, you get way too involved in our arguments. Like she was really like, we can do this. And again, my kids are older. I don't want to compare it. I think your boys still need assistance from you. But I was kind of like, you know, I think you're right. I think I'm a little over-involved in their arguments.
Sometimes. Millie, what do you think?
I agree with everything. And it's... the challenge will just be trying to figure out how I can give him that control.
Yeah.
Back. And to stifle my initial reaction of disappointment, of course, you know, yeah. I have to go, oh, okay, well next time, you know, maybe next time you'll catch yourself or whatever. Right. I try to make it fun, you know, in the bathroom. I got the special Pokemon book that you can only read in there.
Just right.
It's just trying to come up with new ways to give him that control.
Also knowing, Millie, that Pokemon book is making an impact. Sometimes when we do something and we're like, but it's not working every time, or it doesn't work yet, we think that was a failure, but that may be something that tomorrow or 2 weeks from now, or maybe it's already working in some of its own ways. So all the things you've already done are playing a role. Like I think, when our children make a big shift or change, or when he starts to make a choice, it's not because of one thing you did. It's because of a bunch of things that you just keep doing. Why I'm doing this is I picture it like rolling something and it keeps picking up things along the way and it gets bigger and bigger. And then he's like, okay, now I'll make the change. It's because of the Pokemon book, the talk, the time you were disappointed, the time you handled it perfectly. then he makes the change. Do you see what I mean? So mm-hmm. you're not necessarily, it's not that you're doing it wrong or that the choices you've made thus far have been failures. It's he's not there yet, but you know, all the other things have played a role.
All right.
Thank you.
You're yep. welcome. So we had a feeling Monday was going to be a little slow as far as participants, which obviously it is. And there's a few questions I can go into, but would you rather talk about your backup teaching piece or no?
Sure. It's up to you.
Do that.
Okay. So I wanted to share something today with all of you because,
I asked Jen if she wanted to check in.
Let's do that instead.
So hi, Jen.
Hi, Jen.
Hey guys.
How's it going?
Thanks for checking in. That's really kind of you guys. I'm really having a hard time. Mm-hmm. I think because the holidays, it's like the perfect storm of everything kind of coming together. The good news is that we have a great marriage counselor. She is really, really good. So we've been seeing her every Monday. So we saw her earlier today, and she's helping us kind of try to recognize that right now is like the worst possible time to be moving forward with anything, kind of like, you know, get through this period of the holidays, and then kind of start formalizing things. The hard part today about the counseling was that I feel like I'm stuck in the suffering. I want to move to healing. And I just feel so unstable all the time. And Vinny and I have tried to, I try to do 2 days away. Like I do Tuesday nights and then I go out, and then Friday nights I stay at my sister's. The boys don't know anything is going on. I basically have said to them, well, Nicholas knows, I think I told you guys, but my oldest, but my younger guys, I just explained to them that I'm, and they know this, that I'm highly sensitive. And so I gave them the analogy of a screen door versus a storm door. And I said to them, you know, every day there's like a screen door in front of me and things just keep coming through the screen. So on Tuesdays and Fridays, I leave so I can put the storm door up and keep all the things from. So kind of explain that to them in a hopefully a normalized mental health way. And my one twin gets it a lot because I told him the other day that my storm door wasn't working very well. And he said, Mom, you got to go buy a new storm door then. So it's really just, I think, you know, the holidays are about spending time together as a family. And it's really hard for me to pretend like things are normal for the sake of the kids. And, you know, the counselor today was trying to help us figure out like the week between Christmas and New Year's, Vinny has off, kind of how we can make things good for the kids, but also okay for us in terms of, you know, could I go somewhere? Could he go somewhere? So it's, I think, you know, Vinny said today, he goes, you know, I have a lot of feelings too. I just don't show them. And I said, I know that you have all the feelings. It's just the feelings for me penetrate so deeply that, you know, I just feel sick all the time. Mm. And, I wish that I could just kind of separate and say like, okay, turn all this off until after January 1st. But I don't know how to do that. So I'm thinking that maybe, you know, all the days of the break to try to separate, like have Vinny do stuff with the kids and then have me do stuff with the kids, and but make it kind of not seem too crazy. And if we do something together as a family, make it be like a movie, so we're not really interacting with each other. And there's nothing outwardly hostile between Vinny and I. It's just all the, it's the suffering. I'm stuck in the suffering and I hate it.
Yeah.
And I hate it. And I know it's going to take time, and I know, you know, practically that everything is going to be okay, and that, you know, we met with a mediator last week, and we talked about a lot of different things and ways to maintain my health insurance. And so we've gotten more information, which makes me feel good, but it's like, I just want to press the fast forward button and just be there. Mm-hmm. And I did hear from Amy, and she sent me, is that her name?
Right? Yep, Amy. Yep.
So she sent me some stuff that I needed to look at and to fill out, and I need to do that. And I think that there's also part of me that just wants Christmas to go away. Like, yeah. There's so many. Oh, which, by the way, thank you for Canvas people, because I've ordered like 25 canvases. So I've gotten a lot of good gifts that way. They're like my go-to present this year.
Oh, they love you.
They're going to be like, who is this lady at all hours who's sending these things? And then I got lucky, because the one day every single canvas was $9.99. So I ordered like 7 or 8 canvases that day.
Nice.
But I think that I can't handle all the things together, but yet I need to handle a lot of the stuff. You know, my twins are still young, and Christmas is like a really big deal, and Vinny's family's so overwhelming at Christmas. So I want to try to protect time to take care of myself, but then there's so little time. So yeah, I'm just kind of, I feel like we're making progress, but we've been in marriage counseling for 12 weeks now, and 12 Mondays in a row has been really hard to unload everything and kind of come back to reality for the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, with the holidays, it's a lot. So mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me tell you guys about, you know, an update. And I think about you guys a lot, because I really, I'm just so grateful that you're so kind and compassionate and such a loving group. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. We'll always be here. And you know what, Jen, why don't you just half-ass it a little bit? I mean, seriously, like, you know, and I say it that way because this is almost like a time when, okay, this is my analogy. This is what I was thinking about when you were saying this. I was thinking about, like, last year at this time is when I had the flu, right? And I was in bed all the time, and I was so sick, and I kept thinking, like, I should be doing this, or I wish it was different, or I need to get through this, or this needs to get done, or I need to demonstrate to my girls that I love them. I need to make sure that Todd knows this. I was so hard on myself. And now in hindsight, I'm like, why was I not half-assing it? Like, that is, you are in the middle of grief. You are in the middle of change. You're not supposed to be doing it the same way you would have done it last year, or even what next year is going to be like. There's like an acceptance of, I'm not going to do this time well, period. And I remember when one of my girlfriends was going through her divorce, or when that decision was being made around the holidays, she, you know, we talk a lot about release valves, and she needed every day just to drive around in her car and listen to music, and she would go get a Coke, God forbid, from McDonald's, and drive around and enjoy that Coke, because that was really fun. And she was like, that's not something I normally do. It took me out of my, and I would listen to music from high school and college and remember who I am. And she'd drive around for 30 minutes and then come home and be like, okay, now I'm going to make dinner. But she needed a daily release valve, and there's no guilt around it. You realize it's beyond, I don't like using the word self-care, because that's become so, I mean, believe me, I still believe in self-care, but I don't want to be like, do self-care, Jen. That I'm saying, like, get through this. You know what I mean? Like, do what you need to do to get through it, rather than think, how do I do this well or the right way? Just half-ass it. And then you're going to look back and be like, thank goodness I was gentle on myself, and I probably could have 1/4 assed it. Mm-hmm. Does anyone ever say 1/4 assed it?
No.
Sweetie. Okay.
So yeah, that's good advice. And all we want to do is create the space for you to kind of be able to express your feelings and lean on the team and all that.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, you're waiting for January 1. So the first thing I need to tell you, and you know this already, is January 1 will eventually come. Now it's whatever, 14 days away or whatever we are. And whenever I feel like I'm overwhelmed and I have to go on a long business trip and my kid's struggling in this, and I start thinking about all the stuff that is coming up that I don't want to have to deal with it. What I try to do is just kind of like, okay, I'm totally like creating drama in my head. And right now I'm playing basketball with a bunch of guys at the YMCA. Like right now, that's what I'm doing. Or right now I'm sitting on my chair in front of my computer. And it's kind of like when my story starts spinning, when I'm in a good place, I can catch myself and say, dude, you are so far from the present moment. It's not even funny. So my question, my response is similar to Kathy's, which is one, go easy on yourself. Don't expect too much of yourself. Yeah. That's probably the best advice you could hear. And then secondly, when you are, when you find yourself like longing for January, because January 1 is going to come and not everything is going to be fixed. And there's going to be good days and bad days and good moments and bad moments. So just try to like right now in this moment, right now you're sitting on the computer with seven people that are supporting you and just take that in. And then your kids are going to come home from school and just be there. So just be in the present moment as best you can. And because I can't let a moment go by without me passing along a resource, and Kathy's probably got 10 books to my one, but Jeff Foster is a wonderful author and he wrote a book called The Deepest Acceptance. And you know Zen parenting well enough to know that I quote this guy a lot. One specific quote that I always quote, remind everybody of, but if you don't know what to do, like, what do I do with this discomfort? And you're up for reading a book, that's one that you can go on. And I'm sure you got.
And my recommendation, if you haven't already read it, is Elizabeth Lesser's Broken Open. Mm-hmm. The whole first beginning is about her divorce, Jen. And her, you know, she started all these businesses with her husband. They had two sons. And they got a divorce and she considered herself a very spiritual person. She is obviously Elizabeth Lesser's who started Omega Institute. And she thought similar to what you said last week, this shouldn't, you know, if I do all these things wouldn't be happening. And as we've confirmed for you and validated, that's not true. Things do happen like this. It has nothing to do with how spiritual or how emotional you are. Things happen. So Elizabeth Lesser's book is really wonderful too. And you can get it on audiobook and then Broken Open, you know, then she takes it to all sorts of places because you are really in probably the most raw state. Does raw feel like the right word? And I do not like, my legs are tingling because I do not like that raw feeling. I know that feeling, but I'm telling you, the raw feeling is when everything can be brand new again. Like that's, think about what rawness is. You strip down everything. Everything that you thought you knew, you don't know anymore. It's gone. You're like, oh, my foundation and my legs. I'm like, I feel like I'm falling off a building. But rawness is where you have to be. And you know what? If you need a word that's not so scary, why don't you say you have the flu right now? Like, and I'm not to everybody, but it's not about pretending, but it's about just how would you treat yourself if you had the flu? Mm-hmm. You know, would you be like, oh, I should be doing this better, or I should be like, you know, I should be more this, or I don't even know what words you're using with yourself. But if you were sick, because you are, yeah, in a way, there's an emotional sickness right now that needs to process its way through, just like a flu or just like a cold. And we have to honor that as much as we honor the physical. Mm-hmm. And so just, you know, those are our gentle thoughts.
And then the last thing is if you want to laugh, pull up your favorite episode of Zen Parenting Radio and put us on half speed and we'll sound really drunk. Like, I think it's hilarious. But you got to do it on your phone because your phone has the capacity to go to half speed.
We'll be like, and then I said.
That's just one idea. Or, you know, not to like escape through laughter. But
why not? But that's what I mean about half-assing, escape.
Think of your favorite movie. Or like Between the Two Ferns, Zach Galifianakis, he had like a little YouTube show. And it's absolutely hilarious. So just sprinkle a little bit of that into your day as well.
Yeah. And that's for go ahead, Jen.
I would say one of the, I guess, terms that I've used with some of my friends is I feel like I'm just in survival mode.
Yes.
And I'm trying to focus on just, you know, we're ordering a lot of takeout. And yes, I'm fine with it. The kids' homework, I talked to the teachers and I was like, listen, I'm in survival mode. the reading logs aren't going to get done.
Right.
If they do their homework, they do. Like right now, all I can do is keep it together. And the teachers have been really, really great about that. And I think that probably the hardest part about it is I don't feel like I'm bringing my best self to my kids. And
I
just feel really guilty about that because I feel like they deserve better than me. And I know that that's like that, you know, that voice, that unhelpful voice that talks in my head, like Todd talks about with the untethered soul. Like, I know that that's not helpful and that's just increasing my suffering. But, you know, I look at them and I just think, you know, they deserve better than me. And I have to stop. Like, I have to just tell myself to stop that script and know that I'm enough for them.
Yes.
That they're going to be okay.
And throw a word in there, say, when you hear that roommate, that neurotic roommate in your head say, they deserve better than me, change just one word to they deserve all of me. Mm-hmm. And this is a piece of me too. And remember, when Todd and I say our kid, you know, about role modeling and our kids learn how to live by watching us, it's not all about being happy. Mm-hmm. Like, our kids need to learn that we go through things and that we feel pain and that we're human and that sometimes we're just surviving and sometimes we're just getting takeout, and that's part of the process too. That's like part of being human, and they're watching you go. And again, I know that your younger kids don't know exactly what's going on, and that's fine. But no matter, it's okay to put down, and I'm not going to say drop the ball because that sounds like it's a mistake. It's okay to put down the ball for a little bit, mm-hmm. and be like, I'm going to just put that down and we're going to get takeout. I'm going to go for drives and I'm going to go out on Friday night and we're going to watch movies instead of us doing something educational. And I'm also going to be kind of checked out. And when you look back on it, I don't want to jump over it, but I want to give you a little vision of hindsight. When you look back on it, it's going to be such a small time, a short time. And I'm not saying that the whole grieving process will be short. This is a pretty big time because you're just making the decision. Everything out, like, it's, you know, as time goes on, you're going to get more used to this decision and this change. There'll still be things to grieve, but it will not have the rawness that you do now. So you have the flu. And you just do. So it's your kid, you know, if you had the flu right now, would you say my kids deserve someone who never gets sick?
Yes, because all moms take the motherhood. You said that to
I
yourself?
Probably did say that.
So. Yes, you would.
But what I'm saying now is how ridiculous that was.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but most moms say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we're like.
Dads are easier. Like, no.
Dad's like, I got the flu, close the door.
Yeah, I'm in bed. You take
I'm
care
in bed.
It.
You do it. That's such a stereotype that we just put out there. That's not true all the time. And Todd doesn't
just most of the time.
So, you know, just we'll keep, you know, checking in with you. And again, I know a lot of people were able to check in with you on the Facebook page. Keep looking there because I know, you know, people have asked me how you're doing and wanted to say, should we do this? Should we do that? And, you know, this is the time where I love being a virtual community because we're all over the country, but it would be so fun if we all lived in the same couple blocks because then we could like bring you dinner. You know what I mean?
All over the world. Nikki's from New York.
I know, all over the world. Like, you know how people like bring, I remember right after my dad died and some people would just show up with like dinner. And I was like, and again, you guys are all probably like, yeah, that's what people do. And I know that, but there's something so beautiful about just someone being like, let me take care of you.
Well, and this is a little bit dangerous advice I'm about to give.
Uh-oh, I'm scared.
But there are millions of people that would change places with anybody.
All of us.
On this call.
I know.
Right now.
But it doesn't.
I'm not, that's the tricky part.
Yeah, don't do I shouldn't feel this way thing.
But there is a perspective there too, yeah. Isn't there?
Well, what it does is what I view those things at is you're not alone.
Yes.
That there are, there's a lot of people who are in pain who instead of thinking I'm doing it wrong, you say, oh no, I'm part of this human experience. Because there's other people in pain and other people who are struggling and instead of going down a rabbit hole, say, but we all, you know what I always used to do, and I still do this in different versions, but when I was in college in my early 20s, whenever I would get really depressed, I would go to the bookstore. There were so many back then. Now there's like only Barnes and Noble, like maybe one or two, but I would just go sit in the biography section and like read people who had come through really hard times. Like I remember reading Joan Rivers' biography on the ground at Barnes and Noble and being like, oh my God, the things that this woman has gone through. And at the time she was still, you know, obviously this was years and years ago, she was still like making a living. And I'm like, how did she get through this? But it's like, that's, you pull like other people's pain to help remind you that you're going to get through it. Like we can tell you that right now, Jen, you're going to get through it.
Yeah.
But you got to feel it as you go through it. Yeah. You're going to be okay. I can say that with a lot of confidence. You're not going to jump to being okay, but it will be okay. And so you can look at that kind of out there as the light and then just follow that light, you know, just walk toward it. It's a very
one good parenting thing that I felt proud of was that my oldest son, you know, he's seen me upset a few times and he, got me a card and it said, love me more than anyone. You love me and accept me more than anyone. And you open it up and it says that could be unconditional love or just low standards. And then I hope you feel better. And if there's anything I could do. And I went to him later that night and I said, listen, you know, you're right. I'm struggling. You see me struggling. I said, but you know, I'm an adult and I've got adult stuff that is going on and I can't explain everything to you. I said, but I want you to know that I'm going to be okay.
Yes.
I'm struggling right now, but I'm going to be okay. And that it's not your job to take care of me. Mm-hmm. I said, the one thing you could do is maybe give me some extra hugs. You know, if every day you think about giving me some extra hugs, that would be great. I said, but I have to figure this out and I will, and it's going to be okay. And you got to do you and be a kid and have all the fun that you're having and everything. And so I think that he really processed that because it seems like he's, you know, he's hasn't been obsessing about me or anything like that. So I felt at least good being able to make that separation to acknowledge, yes, I'm suffering, but that I'll be all right. And that he doesn't have to take responsibility for it.
Yes.
Well, and I feel compelled to read Millie's chat. Give yourself some grace, Jen. Half-assing is a great idea. Sending hugs, hugs, hugs. And then she also says, see, that is proof you are doing it right. Look at that wonderful son that you are raising. Mm-hmm. Proof is in the pudding.
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Happy holidays. We'll catch you guys, obviously, on Facebook, but the next Zen Talk will be sometime after the new year.
Yes.
And
You know, check in like on our Facebook page. I know we all kind of stay away from technology over the holidays or whatever. Maybe you don't. But, you know, we can post things on the page on that day. There's no like rule that we're not going to see each other until then. If you need to see people, that's what a virtual page is all about. Just put something out there. Todd and I will at least see it. So we'll, you know, get to it as soon as we can. So all of you who are struggling with something, you're not alone. There are people all around you who care about you and love you and won't let you fall down. And if you are feeling really good about this year, that's wonderful too. I just wrote something recently about how what we're grateful for and then our grievances can live side by side. They don't cancel each other out. It's not that, especially during the holidays where I kind of feel like I said this on the show, but the holidays bring out the scariest and the best simultaneously. They live together. So when we're having a tough holiday, that doesn't mean we're doing it wrong. It means all of our emotions come out during the holidays. So embrace them all and honor all of them. They all have something to teach us and we're all in it together. So you're not alone. So we love you.
All right, guys.
Bye, buddy.
Be well.
Be well. And we're going to see Peg soon.
Yep.
See you soon, Pegs.
See you on Sunday.
We're coming. Yay.